outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is The God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, this is the podcast that almost wasn't. We have tried a number of technological issues or sorted through a number of them to help this phone call happen, and hopefully we finally got it now. I think so. So, Amy Hauser here from the Woodlands in Texas. How are you?
I am well. Thank you, Wayne.
Amy and I have been friends for, 8 years or so. Her and her husband, Tom, invited me out to the Woodlands and near Houston here, 8 years ago or so. And we've kind of stayed in touch since then. And now it looks like we're going to be on a third parter of something that was not planned to be a series. Kyle and I talked about betrayal a little bit one day, and then Jack wrote us from South Carolina and said, you know, it'd be really interesting to see this from the betrayer's side, you know, what they've been through. And so we put out one called The Wounds of the Betrayer. And Amy, you texted me before you even listened to the podcast. You just saw the title of it and were intrigued.
Yeah, I was actually like a few minutes into it. And you guys were talking about, boy, if we knew someone, that would make a really great podcast and just have that side of the conversation. And I like hit pause as I was cleaning the house and I'm like, send you a text. I'm like, Wayne, do you remember our story?
I remembered some of your story. And people always who go through very deep things with me, they'll often years later say, do you remember that story I shared with you? And particularly if it's painful stuff to them, I somehow have a forget-a-meter. It just goes away. And I know I don't see them through that lens, which is helpful to me. I don't see them as, oh, they had that problem in their past or they had that thing in their past. But so for some reason, I lost touch with that. But you went through a very difficult time here a number of years ago. And let's kind of, because two pieces to that story, right? There's the betrayal part and there's also a physical part. So
my husband, Tom, and I have been married for 29 years. But over a decade ago now, Tom and I just went through some really hard times. And to make a very long and complicated story brief, we dealt with infidelity. That was on my part. I was the one who stepped out of the marriage.
And Kyle and I even joked about it. It's almost always the guy, but you know, women deal with this too. So that was
you did though in that particular podcast a couple of times though, you came back around and said, now it's not always the guy.
Right.
But, you know, it just seems to be the guys more so.
Except there's always a woman who's involved in that with the guy.
And thank you very much for that.
And they're mostly married. Right. So I don't know why we zero in on the guys more than the women. But
And as a person who has been the betrayer, there is a lot of looking back. And I'm sure we'll unpack some of that in a little while. But I'd look back on my life, and I was somebody who grew up in the church. Grew up, though, in a family with there was a lot of dysfunction in my family, a lot of posing and like, be this, look like this. If you act this certain way, then it kind of portrays that kind of an image. And I realize, especially in the work that I do now, I foundationally wasn't in a very stable place for a long time in my life, not up until I was in my 40s, and I'm in my mid-50s now. And when I look back, I can just kind of see where I was one who was always looking for others to validate me and who I was. And that would give me a sense of peace about myself versus that true knowing of who I am, which when you have that strong foundation, then you get to act out of that place versus kind of reacting. So when things were going rough or weren't going the way I wanted, I would seek out like something to fulfill the longing of my heart. And so that kind of got me into that place. There was a lot of struggle, a lot of strife in our relationship. Just every marriage has.
Sure.
And so I think there was just some things there.
And you had kids at the time?
Yeah, I did. We have two kids. For us, we were in a situation where I feel like as a believer and as a follower of Christ, there was something in my heart that never could settle with this response of the flesh, right? And so I went to Tom and actually told him about it. It wasn't something that was discovered. It was something so brewing in my core of my being that I'm like, if we're ever going to make it through, we've got to deal with this. Because you can walk away from betrayal that's unknown betrayal and just think that you could go forward. But I knew in the core of my being that is never going to work. You'll just like, there's like the enemy will have kind of like his claws in your soul if you don't actually deal with the root issues of what's going on.
Yeah, I want to explore that more in a minute. So you had this infidelity. Was it just a moment or was it a relationship over a bit of time or what?
So it was a relationship that happened over a course of of time. Okay. To make it kind of worse, it was somebody that we knew. And so if it wasn't dealt with, in my mind, it could continue on for a long time because I would see that person.
Was he married as well?
Yeah, he was.
So it was a betrayal on both sides and this relationship continued a bit. Yes. Couples, you were friends?
Actually, yes, which made it really hard.
I bet. So you're living this lie for a bit of time. And then you felt like you came to a point where you could no longer just end it and hide it. You really felt like, had you ended it by the time you told Tom, or was it still going on?
Oh yeah, I'd ended it. And I'd ended it several times before, but it was like there was just that thing that it felt like if you're not dealing with the honesty, it's still there and it's going to eat you alive. Those kinds of things can consume somebody whose heart is truly in ways has been surrendered to something bigger than themselves, but yet you're walking in the flesh in your own ways.
Tom had no idea?
Okay. No, he didn't. Wow. He had no idea.
And so you'd end it for a while, and then you just really couldn't feel like that was good enough. You really needed to sit down and talk about it. How long was that? After you ended it the last time? Was it like, the next week I wanted to tell Tom, or was it a couple of months, or...
Do you know, the funny thing is, I think I blocked that out of my mind. And as somebody who can walk and chooses to walk into a betrayal, you become a master of blocking things out. Okay. And then that will bleed later on into other elements of your life. Because there's always a price and a consequence for things, right? And so I honestly don't know if it was a couple of weeks or a month. I really don't know.
Would you say I compartmentalize? So there's this relationship over here and I keep it away from this relationship here and I'm not thinking about it in between. I'm not thinking about the betrayal when I'm with Tom that I'm doing to him behind his back. He doesn't know. It's compartmentalized enough that you don't know?
Honestly, Wayne, I think that's what happens. Okay. The complexity and intricacy of what the human mind does to function. Again, you don't realize when you're in that place the consequence of that, because that will bleed out even when you start walking in the light.
And by consequence, you don't mean God punishing you, right? By consequence, you just mean the fruit of the action.
Absolutely. But you know what? There is a season, I think, of the betrayer that will listen to that voice. You get into a place where you're listening to the wrong voice most of the time. Okay? We have a choice, in my opinion. We get to choose, right? What voice we listen to.
Yeah.
And if you learn to listen to that wrong voice, that one that shouts, the one that tells you you're worthless, the one that throws shame, the one that throws a sense of entitlement. And I'm not going to speak for everybody, but we have that ability to say all the time, oh yeah, I'm entitled for this, or I deserve this. But if that all of a sudden just grows and grows and grows, you're listening to the wrong voice all the time, even though that other one is there saying, I'm going to wait, I'm here. But you choose the wrong, then you've got a season where, like I said, consequence. It's not God's, to me, like he has revealed himself in this past decade or longer of who he is and how his voice works. But that enemy is continuously saying, you listen to me for a long time. I'm still trying, you know, it's going to just keep trying to come back in. And I have to choose who is Lord over my life and over my body, over my mind, over my entire being.
Was that part of when you tell Tom about this? Is that part of what began healing in your marriage? Could you say it was really rough in that season? Was your marriage already getting better and you opened up to that? Or was the opening up and then the dealing with it as a couple, was that something that really drew you together? And I'm sure both are true, but can you give us a feel for that?
I think that these are good questions, things honestly haven't thought about in a while.
But this is, let me just say this before you go to that. This is not the first time you've told the story, right?
We're open about it. But honestly, this is probably the most in-depth conversation I've had about it. I think more on a high level, I talk about grace, the forgiveness, the, you know, walking into that and what does that look like in life. But really getting in and unfolding what's going on with the betrayer. Yeah, I haven't done that before. But I think it's a really important thing. And I think it's something that that I feel like is part of, just because of what I do as doing nonprofit ministry, like, it is an element that people need. It's a side of me that's important for people to realize. There's a lot of different bits of brokenness, trials and difficulties that I've encountered throughout my life. Part of what I think walked me into that with a mindset that I had growing up, a lens I looked at things through, but how we can use all of those to become the person we were made to be, and a shift of perspective of how we look at that is so important. I think the world needs that.
I think it does too. The conversation I had with Sean and people just a few weeks ago, and people, a lot of people just saying, man, I can't believe the vulnerability and the openness, because we just drilled down into a thing with this brother from the UK. And at times he was concerned about the vulnerability too. And yet my experience says, unless I'm vulnerable, unless you see the real me, I don't get to help you. If what you're relating to is the image of me, the one I make up and the one I'm willing to present, and I don't share the dirty laundry as well, the struggles, the pain of it. I know when Sarah and I were pretty honest about a struggle we had about 8 years ago, people would say, I'm so glad after so many years of marriage, you and Sarah still struggle with real stuff. And I'm going, my gosh, yes, we do. And if it's about opening our lives to the reality of God, and other people need that as well. But like you're saying, I think most people listen to that loud screaming, you're worthless voice, and don't find a way to lean into that. You are loved and I can heal you, and you don't have to live in that anguish and anger. Because of the people that have been major betrayers in my life, none of them have come back with an honest, I'm sorry, and owning it. I mean, people want to put little band-aids on it and say, hey, let's pretend we just had a bad misunderstanding or something, instead of, hold it a minute, let's just really drill down into what's real. And one, I don't know if they can. I don't know if they believe the lie so much now that there isn't a voice still there saying, yeah, but you know that isn't true. Because I had one experience with one of them where I sat down and he was retelling me the story. Oh, we know, it was a misunderstanding. I said, whoa. And then he said something that was factually untrue. And I said, let's stop it. That's not what happened. And he looked at me and said, what do you mean? I said, well, this is what happened. And he paused, and there was this moment of, oh my gosh, you're right. In fact, he looked at me and says, you're right. And then I watched him retreat back into the light. For a moment, he could say, yes, that didn't happen. And then all of a sudden, but we know God's bigger than that. And he just kind of went to that space. So the fact that you could step out of that compartmentalizing the voices that drew you into the darkness and begin to say, no, I want to find my way into the light, even if that's painful. I think that's amazing. I mean, I love that, Amy. I love that about your story.
Oh, thank you. And I will tell you, I could fill up probably an entire podcast season of the process of that has unfolded over the course of a decade, because there's nothing really that's been simple about that, but where it literally had become, I knew in my being, I had to tell Tom, and I had to risk losing my husband, my children, my reputation. That was just probably going to be tossed out. But the ironic thing being, all of those things were seemingly the most important thing that I ever wanted in life, but yet somehow came to that place. And my subconscious, like you're saying, your friend, I think, you know, our subconscious is more powerful than anything we tell ourselves on the external, right? And so his subconscious, his heart, his guardian had created a story to protect him at all costs. Right? Like, so there's parts of us, our subconscious, if you want to call it that, you want to call it the guardian, you want to call it anything, is going to operate in that. Like says, hey, you can't function in that place. You bought a new story. You've reconceptualized what your reality is. And that takes work. And for me, I had to do that because I had lived a lie for a long time. And I did for 40 years in very different elements of my life. I lived different. I told myself different stories, but then it came to that place where it exploded. And I honestly, Wayne, believe like if I did not deal with these things, it could have taken me out. The enemy could have taken me out, like through my mind of my worthlessness, and compiling 40 years of that would have told me a place where you can take your life, where you can end it. And that's the thing. You talked about Judas and you talked about Peter and the difference, but that enemy's lie will overshadow that. The more you give it, the more it starts taking over these things. And as believers, if we step into that place where he says, no, this is who you are. This is what I've done. This is what my blood has done. My blood covered all of that once for all. And then we start stepping into that and going, it doesn't matter what I see or how this is going to come together in the natural. Like, yeah, your marriage, your relationships, everything could be taken away, but I say you are worthy. I say you're beloved. I say you're enough, and start living out of that place. Took a long time for me.
Brendan Manning talks about the imposter self, which you talk about as the guardian, or, you know, the liar that kind of helps you live the life you think you want to live. And you believe those lies, which is why when Jesus says something like, I will tell you the truth and the truth will set you free, everybody thinks that's just such a lovely scripture, except when truth comes at us, particularly in those lies that we have told ourselves to cope with our reality, it's not pleasant when that truth comes because it risks so much. And I find that most people, maybe that's why this narrow road Jesus talks about, most people don't want to lean into that truth because it's painful. It's going to cost something. It's going to risk a lot. But when it's Jesus's truth and he's inviting us into it, whatever risk there is, like just even compare, there's no way to know what your life would be like now if you just continued to try and live the lie with Tom. And I don't mean, you know, any kind of external punishment. I just mean what it rots out in the inside of a person. And my discussion with Kyle has really changed how I have prayed for some of the betrayers in my life. And you see that their lives have not necessarily gone on to be fruitfully wonderful. That, and they may still live in the darkness, may still have justified it however they want to. But without this moment you're talking about, it, this risk, this period of time to be able to say, oh my gosh, I want what's true more than I want what's comfortable. We seem to always come back to that on this journey. Do I want what's true more than what's comfortable? Because when we talk about, you know, Jesus has a wonderful plan for your life, I think a lot of people get confused. Well, whatever's best for me is what Jesus wants. And whatever's best for you is not necessarily going to lead you to the reality that is ultimately the best for you, but whose next steps may be incredibly painful. I mean, I can't imagine with your husband being completely unsuspecting and you sit down and saying, I need to tell you something.
Yeah, unfortunately, that moment is kind of etched in my mind.
That's when you remember.
And not being able to see or know the outcome, but stepping into trusting in that. And I will say from that point, gosh, like I said, I honestly can't, I think I've blacked out a lot of those times to even say specifically when that was. I can tell it was winter. I don't hold on to that because I can't.
Yeah, no, it's great that it's forgiven and gone. I'm not looking to resurrect anything that's not helpful to you.
What I can say from that is that shift from such a self-absorbed existence to being willing to step into seeing the impact that you've had has had a residual effect. Like that will still in seasons, I'll tell you, Wayne, that will, you know, the enemy in vulnerable times, it'll flare back up into me and I'll go into that place. Like I said, I feel like there's been a lot of consequence that has impacted things, but then keeps pulling me back into giving of self, you know, not needing to be self-serving, looking at myself as everything being about me, but having to shift and grow into a new place. I think there's such need for connection, community, for people that have kind of been that betrayer. But for me, it's been this fine line, and I'm circling back just a little bit on your point about when we tell people a lot about it, it's good, but I think when we as a society focus on our brokenness versus we're becoming a masterpiece, we're becoming, you know, this masterpiece in the making, how we balance out addressing what has been, what those individual shards of brokenness, and because I do Mosaics of Mercy, this is kind of an analogy of my life story and what I do.
Well, talk about that for a minute. What is it? What is Mosaics of Mercy? What do you do with that?
Well, Mosaics of Mercy is a nonprofit that started about 4 years ago, me and a group of gals that really what we've become is a resource hub for mental well-being. So we're working with people on resources and connecting people on various areas of brokenness. So whether they're dealing with infidelity or they're dealing with a loss of a child, I'm using specific examples of people that maybe come across, or they're dealing with depression or eating disorders or whatever kind of struggle that can impact our mental health, we're connecting people to resources, whether that means treatment centers, counselors, therapists, reading materials. I do the artistic expression. It's our hope component. We're connecting people to prayer. We're connecting people where we do hands-on experiential learning workshops, and we're making mosaics, but it's not like craft time. Okay. It's taking these, we sit down and go through 10 steps of analogies from the foundation all the way to the finished sealed product of, you know, where the world sees broken, God sees a masterpiece in the making, and walk people through that process. So.
Oh, great. And Mosaic is a great picture of that, as well as a tool to take brokenness and make something beautiful out of it, huh?
Yeah. And I guess I'm just a living example of that. And so that's why I do
it. I love that about God. I mean, if God couldn't make good out of our brokenness, I think always the fear of religion is if you talk too much about that, then people just go ahead and do really sinful things because God will put them back together. I just don't know people who know God who are looking to go do sinful things. I mean, we get lured into it. Certainly we get tempted into stuff that's broken, but I don't think most people say, well, I'm going to go shatter my life really well so God can make a masterpiece out of it. But most of us have shattered experiences in the broken world that we've grown up in and been part of, and some caused by world and sin and flesh, and some caused by religious obligation and all that stuff. But it's wonderful that God can take all those pieces and make something lovely out of it. I love that. Masterpieces in the making.
Yeah. And I think people, like I said, this is one of those areas, for whatever reason, it hasn't really been exposed to the light on the betrayer side as much. I have a feeling that's going to shift. And I think that's part of my willingness to be bold and to step up and share, to give people a little bit of that permission to say, it is a hard, hard thing, but what if rather than focusing on the broken shard, that we look at what is gained in that journey? Now, my journey ended up different. You know, I came into it. I have an amazing husband who is so grace-filled, who is so open to what God's doing, that no matter, it was hell on earth for a lot. And we still have times that are really hard. I'm not going to sit here and say our marriage is perfect. Right. At all. But we're willing to walk with God, right, in the struggle to move forward. And it's not been easy, but we're growing to understand each other more. And that looks different every passing year. And it's getting better all the time, where I can look at my experiences as the betrayer, Wayne, and I can say, I have grown in so many ways as a human being because of my willingness to press into what's difficult. And the funny thing is, I think I've got this theme in my life where I never wanted to press into what's hard. If it got hard, Amy took off. Amy backed away. Amy took the easy road out. Why that's there, this is not the time. That's a therapy session or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But growing in so many ways that I don't think, had I not experienced this kind of pain, this kind of sense of wearing a scarlet letter, so to speak, at times, that I have grown in, where God's like, you must exist knowing your worth in me when you can't see it around you, or you don't feel it around you. Or there's so many areas, Wayne, where I'm like, there's nuggets that I have grown spiritual muscle through this struggle. The compassion that I have is a little crazy off the charts. Because I think I lived it and breathed it. Like, there is nothing that someone could tell me that would shock me.
That's good.
And that I can't see the finished result, that I can't see them through the eyes of the person holding a trophy at the end of the race, that they don't feel like they can even get out of the starting blocks right now.
We even talked about how victims of betrayal get compassion from people around them very, very easily. And the perpetrators of betrayal, it's not the same response, right? People don't just, oh gosh, I'm so sorry for what you're going through, because there's that, particularly in a religious construct, that oh, you're the bad one in this. We give more compassion to victims than victimizers, I guess, is the way that Father Gregory Boyle said it in his book, Tattoos on the Heart, where he's loving gang kids and they're all involved in these really whacked out relationships. And then partway through the book, he says, you know, 154 of my kids have been murdered by 154 of my other kids, and I don't have the freedom to love the victims without also loving the victimizers. And I remember when I first read that, I'm going, oh man, it just takes love to a fully different level. It's easy if you've been betrayed to tell your story and for people to commiserate with you. But when you're the betrayer, when you're on that side of the equation, which there's equal number of betrayed and betrayers. So I'm hoping this is doing a work in my heart, just the conversation with Kyle now with you and prayers and things that have happened in the interim. I'm finding my heart going, I read that from Father Gregory Boyle thinking, well, I want to learn that, to now I feel like I'm actually beginning to have a look into that. And yeah, it's different than the way we mostly organize life, which is there are victims and there are victimizers. And we like putting victimizers in jail, or, you know, the way we want to deal with people who are broken on that side of it is we want to bury them in jail somewhere or punish them severely. And yet they need the same compassion, if not more so, than people who are the victims of it. And that's hard to wrap our souls around because we feel like somebody's earned it. We don't give compassion as easily.
Yeah. And as you're talking, Wayne, my thoughts go to, you know, it's just like, so the enemy loves to separate, right? He's always dividing.
Yeah.
And so anything in the nature and the character of Christ is joining together. And so what if there is something else that he's doing in this, that he's like, what you see in the natural says divide, separate, and, you know, put this one on a pedestal, put this one where you think they belong,
right,
out of your mind and out of your heart. And what if, and I'm not meaning that like to give me some kudos, because this is nothing to glorify. This is nothing to give excuse or whatever for, but maybe there's something else going on. There's an invitation to step into something else. That is one of my prayers in my heart is, did I ever even know what love really meant? And Lord, I need you. That's your character. That's who you are, right? Personified God is love. And so show me more of who you are so I can step into that. What if, I'm going to throw this out, what if there's certain things that we have to step into in order to experience that fully? Maybe somebody who's been and walked through that betrayer side gets to step into understanding love in a way that somebody who hasn't can't. And when I'm willing to step in, to lose everything, to step into, there's something, there's a gift in exchange for that. I can't tell you, like, it's hard when I do these workshops, Mosaic workshops, with some people that are struggling so much. My heart is so drawn to people's pain, not to carry it, but to step into that place and let them know that they're seen and they're not alone.
Yeah.
There's something about that that I can give to some population, some sphere of influence that I might have that not everyone possesses, if I can steward that.
And that's easier, obviously, if you don't know the person who is the betrayer, if they didn't do it to you. Like if I've been friends with you and Tom, and then this happened to Tom, and I'm Tom's good friend, we go golfing, we go whatever, I'm going to feel his anguish about what you did in a different way than I meet you after the fact, God's restoring, it's a great story. Or like I'm in a prison doing a Bible study a few years ago, and this guy talks, I'm telling the story about a young girl that was abused by her cousin. And this guy starts crying and saying, that's me. I'm the guy that does that. And he comes out as a child abuser in prison as this moment of confession. Now I have all the compassion in the world for him. But if he'd done that to someone I loved, that would be very different, right? But I think the kind of love that Jesus wants us to grow into over time is I can even love my abuser. I can love my betrayer. Jesus obviously reflects that to Peter. And I have these things I think about, great moments that wished I could have been in the Bible. I wish Judas would have showed up at the foot of the cross begging for forgiveness. I would love to have that exchange between Jesus and Judas, because that could have been a possibility. He saw no way out. I mean, he saw nothing but go hang himself. Peter, he denies him, but Peter doesn't run back to Galilee. Peter's still in Jerusalem. Here's about the resurrection. Peter still goes. He may feel horrible about himself, but he keeps hanging out near Jesus. He keeps hanging out near his friend. He's going to find a way through that. And I think part of my heart enlarging through this kind of season is realizing, hey, it's the grace you give to the person who hurt you is more powerful than the grace you give to somebody who did it to someone else. And you can love them now later in life because you weren't involved in the bad, on the hurting side of it.
Wow. Yeah, I think Judas' story has always like really resonates in my heart. And when Kyle talked about that he wasn't able to receive the grace, the forgiveness that Christ offered, like that he showed and he displayed for the 3 years together, but he just couldn't own that for himself and then stepped into, you know, like that was a theorizing on that. Maybe this is something that's going on where Peter stepped into it. Judas backed up. You know, I would say for a season for me, that was very much my heart. Like it was so hard. I could not forgive myself. And I still will step into that. At times it will overwhelm me, fight, almost like spiritual attack, right? I'm just going, this is, don't forget who you are. And so just choosing, like, can I believe that that's also for me? That is for me, that forgiveness. You know, there is no scaling of, wow, that's too much. You need to stand over here.
Yeah, and I know with Judas, too, we got the idea. I mean, somehow the devil had entered his heart. He's part of a plan here, and the devil manipulating his life. And so, and he's also doing all this pre-cross. I think we forget how much the cross changed everything of our availability to God based on what Jesus accomplished on the cross and what Judas does way before that. You know, it's just no, I don't know how they recognized grace back then. I mean, the cross was all about repairing the breach from our hearts to God. And so it's significant that it happened. I mean, Judas obviously kills himself before we get to that moment. But and I'm not saying, because people are going to say, well, aren't there truly evil people that don't deserve to be forgiven? And the Hitlers, the whatever in the world. And I believe in evil. I believe people become so embedded in their darkness that there's not a way for them out. Just not a way, because they keep choosing against grace, choosing against light. But I don't think we know who those are. I think our task is to keep loving, because love is the only hope. And when people get looked down on and get dismissed as being bad people because they're serially broken, we really shut the door to whatever redemption might be there.
When I look back on just my life, I'm going to look at a lot of things. I'm also a cancer survivor. We've dealt with a lot of difficulties, come from a background with some addiction and mental health struggles and things like that. There's a lot of areas of brokenness. But when I look at a culmination of choices that I made to then come to that point where you meet that grace, that invitation to step into walking in wholeness, walking in a different path, to repent, to change the way you think, to shift, to turn, by living a certain way for so long, then making that shift and saying yes to something different that I don't really know how to live out, don't know what to do. There was such a choice to step further. Like, I had to press into God and my relationship with him so much, Wayne, that like I literally couldn't put my feet on the ground in the morning without breathing him in. Like, I had to come to a dependency on him more than air.
That's beautiful.
And I have to live in that place a lot. And so what if, whatever it is, whether you deal with addiction, whether you've dealt with broken relationships, whether it's pride and whatever kind of struggle, we look at it in a little different light, that what if that's an invitation? It's never something I don't think that God puts on us, but he uses everything to bring us into that deeper relationship and connection with him. I would never have sought him, I don't think, in my life. Things were good. We lived a really high and mighty lifestyle. We lived a very lush, plush lifestyle for many years that was not helping me in that time. And it shifted us. And I'm like, now I would have never sought him. I never would have looked in this. Like, now my dependence, I have to find my worth and my existence in him. And not in what's around me or the things we have or own or don't do. Or I never would have stepped into that had I not been in that place where I had to make a choice. And I want pursuit of who he is and knowing him, that knowledge, not a knowing intellectually, but a knowing of him as person.
And how does that process kind of play out between you and Tom now? You talk about the graceful guy he is, and I'm sure you guys went through some stuff there. Did you come to a point where you stopped? And how quickly, feeling like you had to make it up to him for what you had done, that you were kind of the lower status in the marriage, so you're always trying to serve your way. Did you have any of that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I'm a deeply relational person to the point where that was a problem, right? And so I would say that, when would I say it shifted? I would say it even flares today in little bits. And Tom will be the one that brings me back to say, remember, that's water under the bridge. That's gone now. That's not who you are. Remember that. And maybe because my approach, like, always was that I wanted, you know, like, humility. You have to have a state and a heart of humble yourself to say, I was wrong. I was wrong. Everything about that. But how do we go forward, and how do you step into being a powerful person now and leaving that behind?
Surely this was a journey for him too, right? Getting to a place of forgiveness with you. It just wasn't the moment you tell him, oh, it's okay, honey, everything's awesome, and we'll just go on like nothing happened. Was there a process there?
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's going to look different for every personality.
But people need to know that, because people hear a story and they don't realize there's years between this statement and that statement. There's years of what had to untangle. Because I know a couple that have been through an infidelity on the guy's part. And they're 20 some odd years later and they've been through counseling and all this stuff. But as soon as the guy doesn't act the way the gal wants him to, then her assault is every time you do your stuff. And it all goes back to the affair that's now 20 plus years ago. And there may be long times where it's just below the surface, blah, blah, blah. But if he steps out in any way that angers her, there's the attack. It's right there. It's ever present in their marriage. And my heart just hurts because she hasn't, you know, she hasn't found forgiveness for him in her heart. So it's now it's like something she holds over him to manipulate him to do what she wants. And I love the grace you talk about, Tom. I've been in your home. I know how you guys relate to each other, the way you guys have found that connection. And it doesn't. And if he's the one helping identify when you're sliding back into that space, rather than, yeah, I could use this. You know, she's feeling bad about herself. I can get something more that I want. And that's just horrible. I'm glad.
Yes. Tom is amazing that way. And, you know, we'll both go back to saying that we've insisted on putting the truth of Christ in the center. We don't piecemeal what he says, right? We've got, it's the whole package. And so we got to walk that out. And if we're struggling, we're going to come back to each other. And we've done a couple of different courses. Mm-hmm. We've done some Danny Silk work. Is your goal in your relationship connection or self-protection? And if everything focuses around that, right? So if my goal is constantly connection, if Tom's goal, which we didn't do this, by the way, Wayne, at the beginning, is connection, then every choice I make, every comment I make, everything is drawing us closer into connection.
People aren't that analytical to go, I'm being self-protective right now, and I'm going to lean into connection. I mean, that has to come through some discovery and some brokenness and some whatever that's really allowing the person involved, whether it's betrayed or betrayer, to say, I want the truth in my heart alongside the love of Jesus that helps us get there. That's what I love about the shack. It's truth travels inside of love. It's not just truth. As important as truth is, if truth doesn't travel inside of love, our self-protection mechanism kicks in and we run from truth because it's too terrifying. It's too scary. We said earlier, you know, all you risk to go to Tom about it. And I think it probably was misspoken, because what you really risked was in the affair. That was the risk. It wasn't going to Tom. That's where you more are aware of what risk for you. But that's why God calls sin, sin, because there's the risk. The honesty about it, that's just the consequence still. It's the fruit of what we've done. Honesty isn't necessarily the risk. The sin is the risk. Honesty is just walking out the reality of it. But it's painful. I get why most people run from it. I get why I have in my life run from it. There's things God, I mean, God put something on my heart, and it may take him 3 or 4 months or 6 or 8 months for, okay, I think I want to lean into that space. Because the first part is like, oh gosh, I don't want that to be true. But over time, he'll win me into it to go, okay, what even what it risks is worth it because he's inside of it with me.
That's right. So I do feel very fortunate to have married a man who, he is a strong man who is about relationship. What I realized about myself was I was someone who I resisted actually the love a lot. Tom always has represented honesty, truthfulness, love in a certain way that I can either draw towards it, even though it challenges me, or I can be repelled from it, afraid, and run the other way. And there were some times I come across, it was just too hard to live and love the way Tom stood firm. And so I resisted and I ran from it because it didn't look the way my mind perceived it should.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yet, so in my running and poor choices, I choose to come back, right? My will, I come back, press in. He stands firm.
Sure.
Brokenhearted? Absolutely. But willing to step in with me in connection, in relationship, and move in that direction.
And even if he would have ended the marriage, as would have been his religious right to do, as the way we interpret scriptures, even if he had ended the marriage, your masterpiece in the making wouldn't have changed. Even if you were divorced and now you're on your own, the love of God, because I know we're going to have people hearing this saying, well, you know, I did the same thing she did, and I got thrown out of the house and lost my kids and access and all that kind of stuff, and say, or never got the reputation back with kids. I think particularly with kids, this is, can be very, very hurtful if they're old right. enough to get what's going on. And yet would still say the same thing, drawing near to God, finding out what's true, leading into that space. And even if you didn't have a loving husband able to walk through this with you to a better marriage again, God's ability to embrace you and your brokenness is not mitigated by that. If things don't come into the light, and so you've got to keep perpetuating a lie for the rest of your life, that will eat you up from the inside. And it will manifest itself even in physical things that are consequences. Not, I know people always say, well, God then, you know, he punishes us for sin. And I don't believe he does that. I think sin is its own punishment. When we give ourselves to the dark road, there are consequences on that road. And then we give ourselves to the light road. There's the consequences to that are fruitful and powerful. And as I come back to embrace Jesus out of my brokenness, there's still consequences of my brokenness. He doesn't remove necessarily, but he heals and transforms so that it can have less impact. And even like you said, even the things that broke me become the sources for a deeper compassion for other people. One of the things that always ticks me off about the Old Testament, I used to read it as a religious guy. Here, David cheats with Bathsheba, murders her husband, and now Solomon comes through Bathsheba's line. It's like God's still going to work with this. I'm still not going to reject everybody and everything. And I used to hate that. I do love it now. Yeah. But yeah, I used to hate it. God, that's not right, man. Because I was a rule keeper. I wanted rule keepers to be rewarded. I wanted Uriah to avoid the death, come back and kill David or whatever and be the great king of Israel. That's the story you want, but that's not God's story. God's story is no pain I can't crawl into and help you out of.
Yeah, those things have been in my heart. That very conversation, I wrestled with those very same things in that very story because I could relate to that story so much more. And I'm like, what, how does that all work? And, you know, back to what you said, consequences, and I'm in a place of really just looking at it as reaping and sowing. Whatever kind of situation where they've been the betrayer, the reaping and sowing, it does continue. Like there are seasons, there's other things as we grow, as we mature. This is one of the hard things. I have two young adult children right now. There are things that come back into my heart where I feel like I wasn't there. I wasn't the mom I wanted to be, needed to be, should. See, I don't want to should on myself all the time, right? But should have been. And so there's loss, there's pain, there's certain wisdom that I can't say as somebody who, like you say, a rule follower can. For people that have been a betrayer, how do we walk in that into the fullness God has, but still navigate the reaping and sowing process in healthy, honoring ways, yet not ways that we listen to the enemy when he wants to, when those situations arise?
Well, the things a rule keeper reaps is the destructive arrogance for broken people. I mean, that's obviously what they reap. And they're very destructive in relationships as well. All of us have regrets. There are things we wish we'd done. So like you talk about with your kids, wasn't there in the way I could have been when they were younger. But I love the way that God doesn't change that, but he can redeem it. He can make good out of a different relationship with your kids now and a different example that they get because of mom. There are ways that God can redeem even when we're reaping. I just want to draw a real line because I think most people like me who grew up with God's in control of everything. So the reaping and sowing is God. So if you've kept the rules, God will give you a good house, good wife, good this, good that. If you haven't kept the rules, then you're going to get bad things in your life. They see God as meting out that. And I think scripture paints the picture that no, it's sin that mets that out. The fruit of righteousness is joy and peace forever. There's a fruit in living the way God's called us to live, but that's out of growing trust and love, not out of rule keeping.
Are all of our choices have a ripple effect? My choices rippled out huge and even has impacts in my life still today. So like you've said, the consequences of that is ginormous. I can choose to walk away from God. He's always there pressing in, waiting for me to step in and to shift that and some of the impact of that. But if you've been betrayed in anything in your life, there's something in that for you. Somebody who may listen to this podcast and have a shut heart, their heart just shuts down for whatever reason because of some experiences in their life. And they're like, I can't listen to that. I can't hear her or receive what she has to say as something with wisdom or insight at all because of their heart. our willingness to like take our closed fist and just even a little bit, be a little receptive to what God might be wanting to do different in this whole season that we're in our lives, like in isolation, in COVID quarantine, he's inviting us in to address and putting his finger on something that we might struggle with, whether it's you as the betrayed or you as the betrayer in whatever element. Are we even a little receptive to him saying, can you look at this with a little different lens?
Yeah.
That there's something in it for you that's going to set you free.
The ripples of your infidelity cause pain that ripples out to a whole lot of people and things. And then the ripples of you coming clean with your husband and your husband finding a way to forgive. And that throws ripples into the world too, that do wonderful things. So everything's a ripple. And hopefully we learn to lean into that space that is more redemptive in the world and less destructive. I think that's the journey for all of us. It's not either or, because like you said, we're a little bit of everything, right? There's ripples we throw in the world that were painful, and there's ripples we've thrown in the world that have been healing and nurturing to other people. And hopefully talking about on a podcast like this and being open about it will put some really wonderful ripples into people's hearts who are feeling lost in their own betrayal of someone they love.
That is my prayer for sure, Wayne.
Thanks for being so honest and open.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.